is Morantz against the Permanente Medical Group Long-Term Disability Plan. Mr. Dubofsky.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Counsel. My name is Mark Dubofsky. I represent the plaintiff appellant, Susan Morantz. Even under a clearly erroneous standard, when this Court examines the entire record, it must conclude that a mistake has been made by the District Court and that the Court's conclusions are unsustainable. These facts are incontrovertible and support Dr. Morantz. First, after two back surgeries, Dr. Gorick indicated that the condition was degenerative and suggested that Dr. Morantz could only work part-time. The same opinion was given and accepted by Cigna for 5 years by Drs. Pappas, Scholm, Parker, Anderson, and Dr. Keeshan. Second, the condition was objectively worse at the time that the benefits were terminated. Dr. Keeshan examined Dr. Morantz, found worse symptoms, had an MRI which indicated that the condition had worsened.
We know what your view of the evidence is, but of course there was a trial held in this case and there were findings of fact made by the judge. The question is whether those findings were clearly erroneous. Why, in your view, were the findings clearly erroneous?
Well, first of all, as we've indicated in our briefs, we challenge the direct application of the clearly erroneous standard because Judge Holderman only saw one witness. The late Judge Moran saw the other witnesses and conducted the rest of the trial.
Can I get a little deeper into, you know, the evidence here? Because nobody could be more sympathetic to back pain than I am. But here we have a woman who is able to shop, run errands for extended periods of time. The job of a physician to me, and I know a little bit about it, seems perfect for someone who claims they can't sit or stand for extended period of time because she can sit to take medical history and complaints with a patient, sit to review the charts, stand briefly to examine the patient, take a walk down the hall between patients, sit again. In fact, that is what she is doing now. The surveillance footage accompanied by the report that described what Dr. Morantz was doing over the course of many days. And so, for instance, the footage might have shown only 5 minutes of a spinning class, but the surveillance report noted that she attended the class for an hour. A spinning class, for God's sakes. You really have to be strong to do that sort of thing. How do you get past all of this? How do you get past her jumping out of cars, lifting 20 pounds, running around town? How do you get past that?
I think that the court has to focus on the objective evidence and not unduly focus on the surveillance as Judge Holderman did. First of all, the surveillance was so inconsequential to Cigna that it was never mentioned in the denial letters.
It's entirely irrelevant. This was a de novo decision by the district court.
Yeah.
Your brief devotes more than half of its space to arguing what the plan did or what the insurer did on behalf of the plan, but under the standard of review, it's irrelevant. All of it's irrelevant. You should concentrate on what happened at trial, and this was evidence introduced at trial and relied on by the judge.
I understand that, but the surveillance is, in this case, nothing other than misdirection, because as Judge Moran noted at the conclusion of the trial, the battleground is whether Dr. Morantz can earn 80% of her pre-disability earnings. The surveillance gives no indication whatsoever that she could earn 80% of her pre-disability earnings because her job didn't entail running errands, going to the pet store, or even attending a spinning class.
Yeah, but that's, you know, she's saying, Mr. Dubofsky, that's not a very good argument, and you're so smart.
The key issues here, Your Honor, have to do with the medical examinations and the functional capacity evaluation and the Labor Market Survey.
Look, she is a highly educated. She is so capable. She could do myriad sedentary jobs. She could work for insurance companies. She could be a medical consultant. She could write for a medical journal. She could work for a pharmaceutical company. She could consult for attorneys who are doing medical malpractice. Or she could leave the medical field entirely.
That's all purely speculative and hypothetical.
No, it isn't. It's the real world.
The evidence that we have in this record, and if I could focus on the functional capacity evaluation, indicated that even minor physical tasks provoked significant pain. All of the activities that Your Honor just described involve things like bending over, turning.
Lifting 20 pounds? Spinning for an hour?
The lifting 20 pounds was shown once. When the surveillance...
Yeah, well, they got it once. Who knows how many times? What, she only feeds the dog once a month?
When the surveillance was taken immediately prior to the benefits being terminated, she needed assistance loading the dog food into the car. But the functional capacity evaluation documented objectively her limited lumbar range of motion. Same findings that Dr. Keeshan made when she examined her. For all of these years...
Yeah, of course, Dr. Keeshan was only, Dr. Keeshan didn't really talk about any, pain or anything like that except what Dr. Morantz had told her.
No, Dr. Keeshan indicated in her examination findings that she was able to provoke significant pain. Pretty much the same pain that was provoked during the functional capacity evaluation. Dr. Keeshan found limited range of motion in all spheres. Dr. Keeshan indicated that Dr. Morantz was taking medication consistent with medication for significant pain. But the question has to come down to the labor market survey that was performed by the insurance company.
Right, and did any labor specialists look to see whether she could earn 80% of her index-covered work earnings working only part-time?
No.
Well?
And if she could only work part-time, the only evidence in the record from Mr. Sargent is that she could not possibly earn 80% of her income.
But wasn't that your job? I mean, was there any discussion by professionals who did the labor market surveys about whether she could have a position writing for a medical journal, for instance, or reviewing insurance claims or a pharmaceutical company? Or, does she have to work in medicine at all?
Dr. Morantz provided affirmative evidence through her vocational expert, John Sargent, that her background and qualifications would not have enabled her to work at a job that would earn $137,000 a year if she was limited to part-time work. Judge Moran had asked both sides to submit evidence as far as whether Dr. Morantz could meet the earnings threshold if she were limited to part-time work.
Are there any exceptions to that 80% of index-covered earnings rule for highly compensated persons? In other words, if a person who earns $5.5 million a year, let's say, claims a disability, but could earn $2 million a year doing work for which she was qualified, would the insurance company still have to pay her disability?
Perhaps yes. The policy states the ability to earn 80% of index-covered earnings. And the evidence in this case failed to reveal that Dr. Morantz could earn 80%. The jobs that were identified on the labor market survey were all shown to be jobs that were not consistent with her background, or there was no evidence that those employers had any idea of Dr. Morantz's background or limitations, or whether or what those jobs entailed that would have been consistent with her background. The entire labor market survey was complete garbage. For 5 years, the insurance company accepted that she could only work part-time.
But then they saw her running around Chicago like Superwoman.
Which they didn't care about.
Judge Easterbrook took care of that.
I understand that. But if the insurance company thought it was irrelevant, then...
If the insurance company thought it was irrelevant, they wouldn't have introduced it into evidence.
Right, they held it.
We have a trial record. The insurance company introduced this into evidence. The district judge relied on it. And I don't see any plausible line of argument that by relying on it, the district judge committed a clear error.
Yeah, that was their ace in the hole. They had it.
And that's prohibited by ERISA.
Well.
ERISA doesn't permit somebody to sandbag the claimant. That was made very clear in the Eighth Circuit Merrill decision.
That was not, that's not sandbagging. That's holding your best evidence for the trial.
But that's completely contrary to the whole spirit of ERISA and the whole explicit statement in the statute and the regulations. There is no ace in the hole allowed in ERISA. I'll reserve the rest of my time.
There is none.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Ryan.
May it please the court, Dan Ryan appearing on behalf of the defendant appellees. Your Honor, you hit it on the head. What distinguishes this case, this ERISA benefit case, from so many other cases that are before you, is the fact that we had a 5-day trial wherein plaintiff was able to put on whatever evidence she wanted to put on, whether it be treating physicians, whether it be a vocational rehabilitation specialist, whatever. That time has now come and gone, and Judge Holderman found, after reviewing all of the evidence, listening to the plaintiff, recalling the plaintiff for a fifth long day of trial wherein she was on the stand for the better part of the day, he made findings of fact, conclusions of law, and put it all into a 30-page detailed memorandum opinion.
Dr. Moran's claims you're wrong. Their condition is not worse, and claims that the MRI showed worsening disc herniation, and the EMG revealed new radiculopathy. Do you dispute that?
Your Honor, Judge Holderman did not.
Yes or no?
The MRI evidence did come in, Your Honor, and the MRI evidence came in through Dr. Keeshan. The MRI evidence, however, is contradicted by the fact that Dr. Keeshan herself testified that she never made any assessment whatsoever as to the critical question in this case.
Well, that's what I was arguing with Mr. Dabowski about.
Absolutely, Your Honor. She never considered the critical question of whether or not the plaintiff was incapable of performing a full-time sedentary occupation. That came out during cross-examination, toward the end of my cross-examination, and it couldn't have been clearer. So therefore, Dr. Keeshan's testimony, whether it relates to the MRI or otherwise, is completely unsupportive of the plaintiff's case.
Now, what about the fact that for 2 out of the 5 days of surveillance, Dr. Mance was not seen leaving the house at all? Couldn't that support the view that even though she can have, you know, remarkably active days, she needs more days of total inactivity to recover?
What we have here, Your Honor, is a plaintiff who's been working since 2001 in a part-time sedentary occupation. The fact that out of the 10 days of surveillance, there were 2 days where the gentleman who was doing the surveillance couldn't determine where she was, and the record before you does not indicate where she was. For all we know, she had driven away. We don't know. There's nothing in the record. And so, therefore, what's important here, and the surveillance, according to Judge Holderman's opinion, has to be put into its proper place. Yes, Your Honor, you're right. It is compelling. But what's significant here is that the surveillance is occurring during times of the day when the plaintiff says, I can't put in any more hours. That's why it's significant. And moreover, it contradicted various statements that she was making to her treating physicians, to the person, the occupational therapist who conducted the functional capacity evaluation, which, by the way, was unrebutted whatsoever. They could have put in an FCE themselves. They chose not to.
Dr. Morantz claims that the insurance company terminated her benefits without waiting for a response from Dr. Anderson to Dr. Manolakis. Now, is that correct?
That is not correct, Your Honor. If you scrutinize the record, what you find is that there is this back-and-forth exchange between Dr. Manolakis, the medical peer reviewer for Lina, Life Insurance Company North America, and Dr. Anderson. And essentially, they had a telephone conversation. Dr. Manolakis was exploring with Dr. Anderson, do you dispute the findings of the FCE, which unequivocally state that the plaintiff can perform a full-time sedentary occupation? And in that conversation, She replied no, according to Dr. Manilakis' testimony. He then, Dr. Manilakis, sent a confirming letter, and at that point, and there was no response at that point in time, the claim was denied, and 6 days after the denial letter, Dr. Anderson now responds. There's something to that. She now responds and says, well, I want to change it, and I'm not disputing anything you say in your letter except that I don't think she can bend over for more than a few seconds, and she can work up to 6 hours a day. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you finish.
Well, the point of this is, and this is all at the administrative stage, so it really is irrelevant under the Diaz versus Prudential case, but the fact of the matter is that there was numerous opportunities both at the administrative level and certainly at the trial court level for plaintiff to carry her burden of proof under Ruttenberg to show that she was incapable of performing a sedentary full-time occupation.
Well, tell me this. Do you think it's safe for a physician to be practicing while taking significant amounts of Ultram, Vicodin, all those pain medications? You know, would you want to go to a doctor who was, you know, filled with God only knows what?
Well, Your Honor, the fact of the matter is that since 2001, the plaintiff has been employed in a medical capacity, first with the state and then with the county.
Her mistake was to work part-time, I think.
That is a part-time position. You're correct, Your Honor. However, the current position...
part-time, it's easy to say she could work full-time.
Well, she was working part-time, and in fact, she was examining patients. She was conducting the patient clinic for the county. So, in fact, she was. If I can now turn to the labor market study. The labor market study unequivocally established, through Ms. Howard's testimony, that several positions were identified, all of which were sedentary, all of which were full-time, and none of which encompassed patient clinic or patient care. And that evidence went in unrebutted. Plaintiff did present Mr. Sargent, a vocational specialist, as well. However, he never even, according as referenced by Judge Holderman, he never even contacted the employers that were identified as for the job positions that were open. And so what essentially went into evidence here, Your Honor, is the fact that the labor market study unequivocally established that she was capable of working in a full-time sedentary occupation in jobs that met the wage threshold, namely the 80% pre-disability requirement under the plan documents. If I can... Are there any more questions? Be happy to answer. Well, for that reason, after a 5-day trial, complete with fact and expert witnesses, the trier of fact, Judge Holderman, found that the plaintiff had failed to sustain her burden of proving that she could not work the additional couple of hours a day in order to move from part-time to full-time sedentary work. Judge Holderman meticulously went through all of that testimony in the trial exhibits and even took the additional step of recalling the plaintiff, the most important witness, some would argue, to probe her credibility. That's why the surveillance is so important. He probed her credibility, asking her questions. He was very engaged in that 5th day of trial. He was testing what she was telling her treating physicians, what she was telling the FCE administrator, what she was telling the claim administrator, and trying to ascertain whether or not what she was telling them was credible, that she couldn't lift more than 20 pounds, that she couldn't sit for more than 20 minutes. And what came out of that last day of trial, I will tell you, was very clear to anyone sitting in the courtroom. It just wasn't credible testimony. And after the 4th day of trial, after testifying that she couldn't sit for more than 20 minutes, she hopped on an airplane to fly to Greece, an 8-hour flight, according to her own testimony. Bottom line, with a 5-day trial, there was no clear error. Plaintiff had every opportunity to present whatever evidence she wanted to present.
I want to make sure there is no argument here that the district court failed to comply with Rule 63. Rule 63 says that the judge, after certifying familiarity with the record, can take over and make findings. but must recall any witness, any important witness, who either side asked be recalled. Did Judge Holderman recall all witnesses who anybody asked to be recalled?
Your Honor, Judge Holderman set the once he became the successor presiding.
The answer to my question is yes or no.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Would you please repeat the question? I apologize.
Rule 63 requires a district judge who takes over a case after a trial has been completed to recall to the stand any witness who either side believes is material to the outcome. My question is, did Judge Holderman follow that rule?
Yes.
Okay.
He did.
Mr. Dabowski can give me his view when he comes back up.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Dabowski, anything further?
Yes, Your Honor. First of all,
did you ask for the recall of a witness who Judge Holderman refused to hear?
No, we did not.
Okay.
There was compliance with Rule 63. We agree on that.
Right. I didn't see in your brief any argument that he failed to comply with Rule 63.
Correct. With respect to Judge Rovner's questions about the 2 days of inactivity, if you look at the record at page L554 of the claim record, the investigators were camped out at her home 5:45 in the morning, 6 a.m. in the morning. They stayed there till 5 o'clock in the afternoon. She didn't go out. What Mr. Ryan presented to you is just rank speculation. With respect to the question about whether the insurance company waited for a response from Dr. Anderson, that answer is also quite clear. The conversation with Dr. Anderson took place on April 21st. If you look at page L411 of the record, which is the claim initial claim decision, which found, incidentally, that Dr. Moranz could perform as a pulmonologist, which is a lie, that decision was made on that very same day before a response was received.
Thank you, Mr. Dabowski.
Thank you.
The case is taken under advisement.
Thank you.